as the rigour of the penal laws was either suspended or abolished, the multitude of Christians in the Roman Empire, on whom a capital punishment was inflicted by a judicial sentence, will be reduced to somewhat less than 2,000 persons. Since it cannot be doubted that the Christians were more numerous and their enemies more exasperated in the time of Diocletian than they had ever been in any former persecution, this probable and moderate computation may teach us to estimate the number of primitive saints and martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the important purpose of introducing Christianity into the world. We shall conclude this chapter by a melancholy truth which obtrudes itself on the reluctant mind, that even admitting, without hesitation or inquiry, all that history has recorded, or devotion has feigned, on the subject of martyrdoms, it must still be acknowledged that the Christians, in the course of their intestine dissensions, have inflicted far greater severities on each other than they had experienced from the zeal of infidels. During the ages of ignorance which followed the subversion of the Roman Empire in the West, the bishops of the imperial city extended their dominion over the laity as well as clergy of the Latin Church. The fabric of superstition which they had erected, and which might long have defied the feeble efforts of reason, was at length assaulted by a crowd of daring fanatics, who from the 12th to the 16th century assumed the popular character of reformers. The Church of Rome defended by violence the empire which she had acquired by fraud. A system of peace and benevolence was soon disgraced by the proscriptions, wars, massacres, and the institution of the Holy Office. And as the reformers were animated by the love of civil as well as of religious freedom, the Catholic princes connected their own interest with that of the clergy, and enforced by fire and the sword the terrors of spiritual censures. In the Netherlands alone, more than 100,000 of the subjects of Charles V are said to have suffered by the hand of the executioner. And this extraordinary number is attested by Grotius, a man of genius and learning, who preserved his moderation amidst the fury of contending sects, and who composed the annals of his own age and country at a time when the invention of printing had facilitated the means of intelligence and increased the danger of detection. If we are obliged to submit our belief to the authority of Grotius, it must be allowed that the number of Protestants who were executed in a single province and a single reign far exceeded that of the primitive martyrs in the space of 3 centuries and of the Roman Empire. But if the improbability of the fact itself should prevail over the weight of evidence, if Grotius should be convicted of exaggerating the merit and sufferings of the reformers, we shall be naturally led to inquire what confidence can be placed in the doubtful and imperfect monuments of ancient credulity. What degree of credit can be assigned to a courtly bishop and a passionate declaimer who, under the protection of Constantine, enjoyed the exclusive privilege of recording the persecutions inflicted on the Christians by the vanquished rivals or disregarded predecessors of their gracious sovereign?
With the reunification of the west and east of the empire under Constantine, a period of relative tranquility returned. Constantine elected to found a new city for the seat of his empire at Byzantium, later to be called Constantinople.
The motives, whether of pride or of policy, which first induced Diocletian to withdraw himself from the ancient seat of government, had acquired additional weight by the example of his successors and the habits of 40 years. Rome was insensibly confounded with the dependent kingdoms which had once acknowledged her supremacy. And the country of the Caesars was viewed with cold indifference by a martial prince, born in the neighbourhood of the Danube, educated in the courts and armies of Asia, and invested with the purple by the legions of Britain. The Italians, who had received Constantine as their deliverer, submissively obeyed the edicts which he sometimes condescended to address to the Senate and people of Rome. But they were seldom honoured with the presence of their new sovereign. During the vigour of his age, Constantine, according to the various exigencies of peace and war, moved with slow dignity or with active diligence along the frontiers of his extensive dominions, and was always prepared to take the field either against a foreign or a domestic enemy. But as he gradually reached the summit of prosperity and the decline of life, he began to meditate the design of fixing in a more permanent station the strength as well as majesty of the throne. In the choice of an advantageous situation,